How does our water today compare to the water we drank 100 years ago? Stephen Halliday, author of Water, A Turbulent History, has the answer.
Our drinking water today is cleaner than it has ever been, partly because of regulation and partly because the methods of cleaning and filtering water have improved and of monitoring water quality. As Coca-Cola recently discovered, it is perfectly possible to take very clean tap water out of the ground in Peckham, put it into bottles and sell it.
What is it that we do to our water nowadays that makes it so much better than it used to be?
Well, it's filtered and it's treated by chemical and biological processes, which simply ensure that unpleasant organisms don't get as far as our taps.
And how was that system developed?
It was developed in the 19th century by a man called Simpson, who first experimented with the use of sand beds for filtering water. He installed a system near Teddington which ensured that his company's water supply ran through a bed of sand and shells before it went into the reservoir. And that bed of sand acts as a physical filter, removing some of the larger objects, and also a biological filter because the sand quickly attracted bacteria whose idea of a good meal is what you and I flush down the lavatory.
Now, how important has the role of water been in the development of London?
Oh, it's absolutely critical. London is where it is because of the River Thames. As London expanded, Londoners came to use more and more of the springs and so on that you find in London. There used to be a conduit that ran from Tyburn near Marble Arch, where they used to hang people, all the way to Cheapside in the city, which brought clean water from Tyburn to the inhabitants of the city. And then, of course, the first major civil engineering work which improved London's water supply was the new river that was built by a man called Hugh Middleton, a silversmith, which brings water even today from the Chiltern Hills near Ware to the vicinity of Sadler's Wells in London.
Now, this sounds like a lot of the water developments that we have had throughout the capital have been through private enterprise, not through government. Is that fair to say?
They were indeed. All the early water companies, like the early railways and canal companies, were private companies who supplied water to the inhabitants of London for profit. And it wasn't until, I think, 1902 that these were effectively nationalised through an organisation called the Metropolitan Water Board. And then, of course, about 20 years ago, they were privatised again in the form of Thames Water.
And with so many people in London and in the southeast of England, and with more houses being built, how are we going to cope with the amount of water that we need? Where is it going to come from?
It's going to have to come from somewhere else. Most of the rain in this country falls in the north and west, as anyone will know who's ever been to the Lake District on holiday. That's the wettest part of the country. And most of it is consumed in the south and east where the people live. So water is going to have to be, first of all, conserved. I think we're going to see these new houses being equipped with water meters. Secondly, the canal system will have to be used to bring water from areas of surplus, like the north and west, to the south and east. That is already happening to some extent. Bristol, for example, gets half its water in that way from the canal system. And thirdly, there will have to be a good deal of human ingenuity and clever civil engineering. There's a place called Denver near Downham Market in Norfolk, where three rivers from Essex and Suffolk come together and flow into the Great Ouse and then out into the Wash. Now, a series of sluices, water gates, has been created at Denver by water engineers so that in times of heavy rainfall, those rivers can actually be made to flow backwards, back into Essex, and they empty into a reservoir at Hanningfield between Chelmsford and Southend and provide water for the local inhabitants. Because Essex, at certain times in dry years, is technically a desert. It has less than 10 inches of rain a year. So things like the Denver sluices are going to have to be installed in order to provide water to this arid area.
That's Stephen Halliday. His book, Water, A Turbulent History, is published by Sutton Books.
Interviews from Passion for the Planet.
Copyright Passion for the Planet.
Listen to more interviews online.
Hear health, environment, lifestyle, personal growth and business experts when it suits you. This service is free. Register now at passionfortheplanet.com.
Find out more at passionfortheplanet.com.